We have our speaker, and she comes to us from Reading, and Stephanie is going to speak for us, and she comes from the Walk the Walk group.
Hello, my name is Stephanie, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 13th, 1987. I have a sponsor. My sponsor is a sponsor, and I do sponsor women. And like Sandy said, my home group, can you guys hear me, by the way? Because
yeah.
I feel like I love your mic is awesome. I'm used to having those mics where you sort of have to wander for them. So anyway, my home group is the Walk group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet Tuesday and Thursday nights at 5:45 at Atonement and Atonement Church in Reading, Pennsylvania. And we would love it if you would come by. The meeting would be so much better for having you there. It was funny. I was sitting there next to my friend Sharon, who drove out with me today, and I was sort of starting to think about myself a little bit, even though Sandy did remind me that this is not going to be all, like, it can't be about me. This has to be really what's supposed to just come out is I sit here letting God work through me. But I was like, I know, I want to start with a joke. And if any of you have ever tried to tell a joke from the podium, don't do it. You know, and at my sponsor's home group, when she'd have me up there speaking, that particular group actually has you start with a joke. So I'd have to go there with the joke either written out or on my phone so I could get it right. But I'm going to spare you guys because my joke-telling skills are mad bad. And basically what it would be is just me trying to work through it. So anyway, today as we were trying to get here, do you know there is a Swamp Mennonite church near here? So what I can tell you is, oh, there's an East one as well.
Yes, there is.
So Waze, when you put Swamp Mennonite Church in Waze, you're about 5 minutes away down the road. So we pulled into this nice, dark parking lot, and we thought, I wonder when these people start showing up for the meeting. But luckily, we also had an address. Thank you, Lauren. So we're like, maybe we should try that. So that's how we ended up at West Swamp Church. So anyway, that's just me warming up and easing in. So whenever I get up here, what it really has to be is what it was like, what happened, and then what it's like now. And what I can tell you about what it was like was before I ever picked up a drink, I was still me, you know? And growing up, I was that kid. I got to do most of my growing up in a place called Scarsdale in New York. And that's a really nice suburb of New York City where my parents had moved there because they wanted me, my brothers, and my sister to be able to go to a good public school to get a good education, because in my family, education was really valued. And my parents loved us, and they wanted us to do well. I come from a very nice family. We lived in a very nice place. And while I was going to school, I had this older brother who, well, in my family, I have an older brother who I adore, and I thought he was the best guy in the world. I wanted to be with him all the time, and because he's my older brother, he did not want me with him all the time. And I used to sort of try and follow him around and be one of the boys, and he was always doing that one, you know, move away, and I just was like, ah, gotta be with him. And then I had my younger brother who thought I was the bomb, and he just was like my bestie. And then I had my little sister who I just wanted to take care of. So we were this cute little family. And what I found, one of the things that was very much part of me was I always wanted the outside people, though, to think I was doing it right. And so here I had, you know, among other things, this little sister who I adored, who I wanted to take care of and all this, but as I was making friends, they never wanted her around. And so what I would do, even though I knew I was supposed to take care of her and be good to her, was I would constantly be like pushing her aside so to them I would look good. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be something. And that's from a very young age. I wanted to be cool, and I cared a lot about what you thought of me. You know, it wasn't as much about what I was doing and what I thought was right, but what I wanted it to be was what you thought of me. And, you know, that's before I even had what I knew of, you know, as alcoholism. And so, anyway, flash forward from 4 years old, and what happened for me was my drinking didn't really start until I hit high school. And that doesn't mean I never took a drink before then, but that wasn't when drinking was. It's like, you know, the first time I got drunk and blacked out, I was probably about 8 years old, but that was just, oops, you know what happens. You're at a wedding, there's the, you know, champagne or whatever going around. I liked the way it made me feel. I liked the way it made me dance. I liked how great I felt. That was 8 years old. By the time I was 15, what I found was it really worked. And I remember when I got to high school, I was like, you know, this cute, bubbly kid coming into high school. And the first sort of mixer type thing they had was I met like the first boyfriend I ever had. And he was a senior, I was a freshman. And this was going to be like what I had seen on TV in my mind, you know. And this was, we got together. And I remember when we started dating, he was the guy who would always bring, you know, the beer with us. And I remember with him, I started blacking out on a regular basis because I liked to drink. I liked to be with him. I liked to be a grown-up. I liked to be all these things that I thought this was the way it was supposed to be. And what happened was, pretty quickly in my being with him, what I found was I wasn't ready to be with a guy who was older than me and a senior and cool and all this, but I was ready to drink the way I like to drink. And so from the time I hit high school, I'm that one who they started saying very frequently to, this is going to go on your permanent record. I don't know if any of you got told that a lot, but I was told, this is going on your permanent record. And it started out, Stephanie, if you keep this up, it's going to go on your permanent record. And then they would just start saying, this is going on your permanent record. And what I started doing was feeling like a lot of people were against me and that I had really bad luck. Because I'm that person who, you know, in high school I thought it was. There, in my mind, there was nothing wrong with drinking in the morning. There was nothing wrong with drinking on a free period. There was nothing wrong with drinking when I was supposed to be in class. There was certainly nothing wrong with drinking instead of going to my sports events. There was nothing. It was what I did. It was where I felt okay. You know, it was where I felt like I could be social if I had to be social, or if I was alone, it was where I felt okay. It was where my skin fit. So I went from being, like I remember, cute and bubbly, to more and more rebellious. And what I thought going through high school was that I was sort of quiet and didn't really bug anyone or anything like that, and that I was just going through. But what I found out later, because I had siblings going through high school at the same time, was the view that people had of me as I was in high school. And what I heard a lot about me was that I was angry, that I was rebellious, that I was someone who that scared people. And if you look at me, like, I know I look very scary. But that's what I brought to the table. And that's high school, when I had just started. And if you had asked me when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, what I would tell you about high school was, that's when it was still fun. You know, in my mind, that's when it was still fun. That's when I was still going out and doing things. That's when you would see me going to parties, you know, whether the parties were in the woods or at someone's house. But it was also when it was, you know, I was stealing my parents' liquor. I was supposedly too young to be in the bars, but, you know, back when I was drinking, like, you know, back when I was in high school, 15 really was old enough to be in the bar. You know, you sort of just had to look at it. It was 18 was the drinking age in New York. And besides, I also had a fake ID, because everyone had a fake ID in New York. You just did. And, you know, I could tell you the name on the ID, but I don't know. I don't see her in here, but it was Marie Patricia Merritt, and I knew her, I knew her birthday, I knew what sign she was, and I could get into any bar with it. I would buy liquor with it. It was just what I did, and, you know, just what I did. And I had other things going on in my world. It's not like I was a bad student, because I did show up to class sometimes, and when I did, I was smart enough that I could get the paper in. I could pass the test. I had really good SAT scores. And these were the things that sort of kept me fueled, because I was one of those people who they would tell me all the time about my potential. Because if you looked at the numbers, if you looked at what happened when I did show up, I was going to be something. But the thing was, I would show up just enough to get by, but I wouldn't show up to actually meet any of that potential. And by the time I got out of high school, and I did graduate from high school, I had sort of made it so I wasn't going to get into any of the places that really I thought would make my potential happen. And what happened was I got into, you've probably heard of a college around here called Lehigh. And that was, I got into Lehigh for second semester, not first semester. And I think second semester is the time when they accept you because you can come up with the money to get in, and people, they have spaces in there. And that's how I got into Lehigh. And when I got to Lehigh, what had happened was my parents, again, I told you they were, that education was very important to them. They had four kids who were going to be going through college at the same time, and so they'd taken out a second mortgage on the house, as well as, you know, I was taking out loans to the hilt to go through. So here I was at Lehigh with the opportunity of a lifetime, and what I did when I got there was I discovered the hill where the fraternities are, and what I heard was that they did was they worked hard and they played hard. And I looked at that and I said, well, engineering is what I'm going to be doing. However, let's just start with the play hard because it seems like that's what I'm good at. So here I was with calculus, engineering, you know, all these other things going on, and I was showing up for the party. And what happened for me was I transferred out of Lehigh with a 1.6 average and a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of feeling like I'd gotten a raw deal. And that's, you know, when I think about how I was when I was drinking, that's what I felt like a lot of the time was I'd gotten a raw deal, had a lot of shame, a lot of self-hatred, and a lot of blame going on as it went on. And so I left Lehigh hanging my head low. And one of the things I said to people when I left, because there were people, for some reason, there were people who would be around me and be kind to me. And I remember people saying things to me like, how are we going to know if you're not coming back next semester? And I would say things because I wanted to be tough. And I'd go, you know I'm not coming back if you don't see me. Because, you know, I'm just that cool and I'm just that tough. And I'm not. I was dying inside. I was dying inside. I just, like, I didn't even want anyone to know what was going on, how bad I felt about the way things had gone. And so for me it was, one more time, I ended up in one more college because my parents were willing to put up the money and I was able to get the loans. And I got into a college called Fordham University, another really good school. And people have said to me, how did you get into Fordham University with a 1.6 average? And what I can say is, when you're showing up second semester, if they can come up with the money, the school will take you and they'll let you stay or fail based on what you can do. And so I showed up one more time, and I was going to turn over a new leaf because that's what I was doing at that point. I kept trying to start over in a new place. I kept trying to be someone else. And I kept thinking, if you put me in a new place with new people, then I'm going to be okay. Then I'm going to be okay, and then I'm going to show you something different. And I had shown up at Lehigh, and when I showed up at Lehigh, I had sort of tried to show up as a hippie chick and be like a little bit different and a little bit cool this that way. This time when I showed up at Fordham, I tried to be preppy at a time when preppy was whatever preppy was. So I had my collar up. I had the look right, because if I could get the look right, then you would treat me right. And, you know, for that, I was able to start up for a little bit. And I showed up, and I was showing up for classes, and I was going to be okay. I knew I was going to be okay. And what started happening, though, was I kept coming back here for a while because I wanted to have that other personality where I could be what fit for me. And what fit for me was the way I drank and the way I did other things. And when I got there, I wanted to be that straight-laced student. But after a while, I couldn't do the back and forth, and I caught up with me one more time. And what happened for me at Fordham was, again, the blackouts started happening. Again, the humiliation started happening. I couldn't, my excuses could not come up as fast as my problems. You know, I could not smooth things over anymore. And what I was getting more and more was my family started saying things to me like, what is wrong with you? You know, it went from being like, she's something, we trust her, you know, yeah, she is getting bad breaks. I couldn't even convince my family anymore that I was having bad breaks. They just were wondering, what the hell is wrong with you? And, you know, I would look at them and I'd be angry and I'd be slamming and I'd be doing all these things or crying or doing all the drama that I do. And, but on the inside I was, I don't know what's wrong with me. And I knew there was something really wrong with me. Because people who do the things I do, there's something wrong. And so there I was, you know, doing that and trying to control all the time. And it was like, you know, it was either I was trying to control or I was trying to be like having the fun that I like to have. So I tried changing all my, you know, my different drinks. And I always say, like, Jim, Jack, and Johnny were my best friends. However, it was like, no, I'm not going to drink beer at this, you know, I'm only going to drink beer. That's where I was at the end, was I was only going to drink beer because beer is a beverage, and we all know no one ever got in trouble just drinking a beverage. And up until then, though, it was as long as I don't drink the vodka, as long as I don't drink the tequila, as long as I don't drink the whiskey, then I'll be okay. And what I kept finding was no matter how much I rotated it, I would eventually end up back where I always was, with the humiliation, with the excuses, with the pain, with the just not wanting to be around anymore. So by the end of my drinking, what started happening for me was that, I don't know if you've had that experience of when you come to in the morning and all you can think is, not again. You know, because that's where I was. I wasn't worried about how things were going to be changing anymore. It was, not again. I don't want to be here anymore. How could this have happened again? And so what I did towards the end was I stopped cold turkey on my own. And when I did this, what it was I was afraid I was going to lose the boyfriend. I was afraid that this time I wasn't going to get away with the stuff anymore. I was going to be caught. I was afraid that all these things were going to come crashing down on me. So I stopped on my own. And when I came into AA, I would have sworn to you that I stopped on my own for 4 months. And what happened when I came into AA was I eventually looked at a calendar and it was closer to 4 weeks. But during that time, it started out where I was like, this was going to be it. This was going to be it. I was going to get it together. And what started happening was I got so uncomfortable just not drinking. Have you ever done that thing where you stop and you're just not drinking and you are so actively not drinking? Because that's what I was doing when I stopped on my own. I was actively not drinking. I was actively not drinking at people. I was letting you all know I was not drinking. And it was painful. And what ended up happening was, though, it's like I was reading the right books. I was saying all these philosophical things. And then one day I was walking across campus and someone handed me a beer. And I drank it because that's what I do at that moment. I had nothing between me and my next drink, and I started going. And what I can tell you was, I don't know what happened for the next couple of months. What I do know was I missed finals. Definitely things were not going well with that guy I was so afraid of losing. The friends who I thought were so important, I was horrified to be around, and just everything was in and out of the blackout. In and out of the problem, in and out of the pain. And so what happened during that time was a bunch of my friends were graduating. I was not among this crew because there was no graduation for me in sight. When you go to school the way I go to school, you don't really get a lot of credits going on. What you get is a lot of financial investment. And what happened was I was at one of these parties that I somehow got invited to. And one of the guys said to me, oh, one of the things I was doing to try and control this was there's certain 12-step programs that you can go to where if you find that you have a problem with alcoholics, you can go to that program. And I knew I was hanging out with a lot of drinkers. So I was going to some of these other 12-step programs, and some of the people who were around me knew I was going to these other 12-step programs because I would be hanging out drinking with them talking about these 12-step programs. And so anyway, one of the guys came up to me and he said, you know, would you take this guy John who had pancreatitis to an AA meeting? And I don't know why he would match us up together, but would I take John to an AA meeting? And I thought about it, and I was like, well, obviously he's asking me because he sees me the way I want people to see me. So I will take John to this AA meeting. And what happened was that, again, I don't know what happened, but I ended up at an AA meeting. And I ended up at an AA meeting by myself. And what happened for me was I knew going into an AA meeting that you guys did not allow people to drink before they came to an AA meeting, so I couldn't drink before I came here. So I'm reasonably sure that I didn't drink the day that I came to an AA meeting. Or if I did drink, I only drank beer, because in my mind, beer is just a beverage, so it didn't count. But so I went to my first AA meeting, and I went there by myself. And I went there, and I made sure that I was wearing the right clothes, and I had the right look, because what I was very sure of was I did not want you to think that I was an alcoholic. And because I was too young, and because of a whole bunch of reasons, but the real reason was because I didn't really want to stop drinking. Drinking was the one thing, even though it was killing me, it was the one thing that sometimes made me feel okay in the inside when nothing else was making me feel okay anymore. So I went into this first AA meeting, and there was someone up at the podium, and he was talking, and he was this older guy, you know, and I was 22 years old, so everybody was an older guy, but except for the older women. Everyone was old. And but I was sitting in the back, and he's telling this story, and part of me is sitting there, and I'm just like, different. I'm different. But then he started talking about things that were me, and some of it were the things he did. Some of it were the things he thought, but a lot of it was the things he felt, because he knew that feeling of that loneliness, that self-pity, that separateness, that inability to connect with others, and he talked about it and he gave examples of it that fit me, and he caught my attention even when nothing else was catching my attention. Because I couldn't say, it's like, you know what? I never lost a house. I never had a house. I never lost, you know, a spouse. I never had a spouse. There were a whole bunch of things. I had never even had a life by the time I got in here. And but what I had was that connection with, like I said, the thinking, the feeling, and he had me. And then he talked about something, and maybe some of you guys have heard of this. Have you heard of this thing called the Big Book? I hadn't heard of it, so I'm sitting here, and I'm in this meeting, and he said, you know, there's a solution, and he got my attention because I was like him, and then he mentioned this thing called the Big Book. And all I could think was, oh, crap, he's a holy roller. You know, he's into the Bible, and I don't know. I've tried that already, because I had been desperate. I had been desperate enough that I had tried, you know, daily mass, daily communion. I tried reading parts of the Bible, and I hadn't been able to make that connection. And if what you guys had told me in here was that it was the Bible, I was like, ugh, I already failed. I'm too bad for that. I can't do that. And so, you know, got my hopes up. They crashed down again. And at the end of the meeting, you know how we all stand there and we hold hands and we say a prayer? So we all say this prayer at the end of the meeting. And for some reason, there was this old lady and she wasn't an old lady. She was probably my age. But she's standing next to me. And we're holding hands. And after we say the prayer, I turned to her and I said, what's this Big Book he's talking about? And what I'll tell you is, God drops into my life all the time in a way that I can never say how it's going to happen. But it was like all of a sudden she lasered in on me, like they do when they know you're new. And she was like, you must be new. And I thought, how did you know? But what she did was, she didn't get in my face too much, but she made sure I had enough information that I knew where I was going to a meeting the next night. I had that meeting list, I had a number, I'd been told what I was going to do next, and I had something, and it was funny, as she was telling me where I was going to my meeting the next night, I was like, no, isn't this enough, you know, and it was like, no, it was not enough, and I don't remember a lot about that early part of sobriety, because what I did was, without having planned it, without having, had any intention of it, I detoxed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which means that if any of you have ever gone through detoxing, I had a lot of fuzziness going on in the beginning. I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of fear. And I was really trying to figure things out without letting you know that I was trying to figure things out. And so, but what I do remember is little bits and pieces. Like at one of my early meetings, having them say things. And one of the things they say in New York when you're getting sober is they go, is anyone at this meeting for the first time? And I was at the meeting for the first time, and I raised my hand, and they said, would you like to introduce yourself? And I said, yeah, I'm Stephanie. And they were like, you know, they give you that pause. And then they're, hi, Stephanie. And then the next person said, you know, "Hi, I'm Marie. I'm an alcoholic." And I thought, "Oh my God, is that what you're supposed to say?" And I didn't know. There were so many things I didn't know, and I wasn't making it anymore out there. And I was in here, and I felt all disconnected. But one of the things you people very much were very kind to me, and I was given my first temporary sponsor because I was told I had to have one. And so they gave me this person, and I didn't know what I was supposed to do with her. Again, early sobriety. If we don't tell each other how to do this, we're not going to know. You know, and here I was with a temporary sponsor, and all I knew about sponsorship was I'd been to concerts that were sponsored by Michelob, you know, whatever it was. And so here I am thinking I'm going to have a sponsor who's supposed to be taking care of me, giving me stuff, all this. And that's not how she rolled. What she said was, "Call me." And I could not remember to call someone. Like, if you told me, "Call me tonight at, you know, 8 o'clock, I would go, "Okay," and I would mean it. I would mean it with all my heart. I couldn't hold two ideas in my head. I would remember I was supposed to call her at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be like, "Oh, wrong again." So this was someone who was, I guess, trying a little bit to hold her hand out to me, but, you know, after she had tried to sponsor me probably for about a month or so, I finally did at that time when I remembered, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to call her tonight. I did call her one of those mornings at about, like, and I say morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning because I was awake after drinking coffee all night. And she was like, "Are you going to drink?" And I said, "No, I'm not going to drink. I just felt like talking." And she was like, "Well, you know what? I have a family. I have kids. I know you haven't been listening, and I don't think we're identifying. So I think you need to find a new sponsor. This is not working out." And I thought, holy cow, they can fire you in AA? Little did I know. And so she fired me, and I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do here, except that I know, in my mind, what I started thinking was, well, then I guess it's time for me to leave. Because if you get fired here, you can't stay. And I remember there had been, like, some people who'd been very kind to me here, and actually the truth is you've all been very kind to me. When I've been totally unlovable, you have been very kind to me. And so anyway, one of them was this really, and this time when I say he was old, he was very old. And he'd been very kind to me. I had his number. He was this guy who would, like, call me up, like, each day and be like, "Hey, turn it over. God and the Irish love you." And then he'd hang up the phone, and I'd be like, but he'd been nice. So I was calling him, and what I wanted to tell him was I wasn't going to be around anymore, but not to worry, I was okay. You know, but I couldn't stay because I'd been fired. So I called him, and what he said to me was, "You know what? You don't have to consider yourself fired. I'll sponsor you. Pick me up in the morning. We're going to a meeting." And I was like, "I don't think you're allowed to do that." But God gets between me and my best thinking. So I picked him up when we went to a meeting. And I remember I used to talk at him. And this was this old guy, totally hard of hearing, half blind, one leg. I am not exaggerating. But again, he was getting me to those meetings. He was introducing me to people. And he was letting me know that whatever I was bringing here was enough. And I'm not someone who was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous formally when I first came here. But what happened for me was I was shown by certain people how we treat each other. And so one of the things I got to do was stay sober. And I went to a lot of meetings in the beginning, a lot of meetings. When I got my first real sponsor, she was given to me. "Stephanie, here's Annette. She will be your sponsor." And I went, "Are they allowed to do that?" And yeah, we are allowed to do that. It doesn't matter. If I had waited around till I found someone who I looked at and I said, "I want what she has," I would still be sitting by myself. You know, if I wanted what you had, I wanted your purse, I wanted your shoes. Man, your nails are cool. But other than that, I wouldn't have known how to choose. Annette was nothing like me, but she was exactly like me on the inside. And she used to have me call her, and what she'd do is she'd tell me about herself, and I'd wonder how she was talking about me, you know. And that's the first way I learned about a sponsor, and she was always kind to me. As I went through the steps, she listened to that first fourth step when I didn't know what the hell I was doing, the rambling one where you don't take responsibility for anything, you know. She was like, "Okay, that's a good beginning," you know. And I stayed sober, went to a lot of meetings wanting to figure it out, wanting to get it right. When I got sober, there was a lot of talk about the 12 and 12, not a lot of talk about the big book. And we were doing the best we could. What I did was started acting out in other areas. I wasn't drinking, but there were other things that I was going to do to make myself feel better. And I think people called it changing seats on the Titanic. You know, if you have one problem you're not dealing with, there's another bunch of things that are going to take you down. And so I started trying to figure out how I was going to fix everything. And I know we have a proven program of recovery, but I didn't happen to know what it was. So for me, I finally got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sober for close to 10 years. And I know if you're thinking, like, how the hell do you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and not know there's a proven program of recovery? I guess you go to the meetings I went to and you hang out with the people I hung out with. And what you do is you march around telling everybody that you know. You're fine. You know you got this. You go to a lot of therapy. You talk a lot of stuff. And for me, the reason I ended up finding the proven program of recovery was because someone asked me to sponsor her. And people had asked me to sponsor them before, but I never had time because I was working on me. And working on me never got me much, okay? But when she asked me to sponsor her, I was like, oh, all right. Of course, out of the goodness of my heart, I will take care of whatever I'm supposed to do with her. And one of the things she asked me to do was to lead a big book study. And I thought, I've been sober long enough that of course I can lead a big book study. I had no idea what was in the big book. When I had read the big book myself, I had started reading the big book on page one. Read Bill's story, sort of skim through, because if you've ever just read Bill's story, it's not great fancy writing. It's fancy writing, it's not great reading. Looked at There Is a Solution, sort of got what was going on, but it wasn't that interesting. More about alcoholism, I'd already read enough about that and There Is a Solution. Didn't read We Agnostics because I wasn't an agnostic. I was like, I know God, we're fine. Wanted to read How It Works, but didn't really have to read How It Works because they read it at the beginning of every meeting. So that's what I knew about the big book, is I was going to lead this big book study. But what happened was there was also a study guide that we were using, and I don't know if any of you are familiar with some of the study guides. The one that I happened to have put in my path was one called The Big Book Awakening. And I also got those tapes that went with it, and they were tapes at the time, okay? They were not CDs. There was no such thing as CDs. So I started listening to these CDs, and what she did was, for this big book study that she wanted me to lead, it was a whole bunch of women. And so I did not want to look bad in front of a whole bunch of women. And what I started doing was listening to these CDs and doing this big book, this big book awakening, so I could at least stay ahead of them. And what I started finding out was what was in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had never known. I hadn't even known what an alcoholic was. What I knew was I was one, and that if I drank, I was going to die. There was a piece of me that really knew that and was terrified about that, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I didn't know the first step, and everyone had told me how important the first step was. But I was like, yeah, I can't drink, keep moving, you know? And what I found out here was that I have that allergy that people talk about, that physical compulsion, that when I put it in my body, I don't know what's going to happen. I get thirsty. It's not like I put a drink in and I like go, that was good. I get thirsty and I get going. I have a mental obsession that I have this thing in my mind that there's nothing that's going to stop me from that. I loved hearing someone say once that I drink until I can't drink anymore, and then I stop until I can't stop anymore. That's what describes how that drink hits me, is my mind is not going to stop me after a while. It keeps bringing me back. It keeps saying, here's a good idea. And then they talked about the spirituality as well. You know, that one where it is, that emptiness, that loneliness, that absolute inability for me to make a connection with another human being that keeps driving me back to the only thing I know that's going to make me feel good. That's my first step, and that's where I was like, oh my God, this is hopeless, and I am an alcoholic of the hopeless sobriety. This is me. I had never known that before. And so I had no choice once I got that than to move on to the second step. You know, up until then, I'd be like, you could put me in a 12 and 12 meeting, and I could say something cute about it, but I'd never actually been through it and hadn't experienced with it. So here I am. These women are doing whatever they're doing with the Big Book study, and I'm supposed to be leading them somehow or another. But I am jumping in on this, and I'm like, I am going after this solution like a drowning woman. You know? And everything changed for me. Everything changed for me. So I went through these steps, and I went through the second step, you know, where it was like, you know, there better be a power greater than me. There so better be. You know, do you believe or are you willing to believe there's a power greater than yourself? There had better be. You know, third step, I made that decision, and the real decision I made was I made the decision to keep going forward with the steps. And I did an inventory for the first time in my life, an inventory that didn't mean that I was going to sit there and say, let me tell you what he did to me and she did to me and they did to me. And it was finally bring it back around to find my selfishness, my self-seeking, you know, my dishonesty, my fear, all the people I had harmed. Everything changed. My story changed. Who I was changed. By the time I sat down with my sponsor for the fifth step, and I had the same sponsor from the time I was 7 years sober for the next, like, 10 years. So she saw the change between that woman who had never been through the steps to this woman who was on fire. When I sat down to do that fifth step, she was scared of me. Because everything had changed, but I was on fire and I was desperate and I wanted this program so bad, and I wanted it to work so bad. So she listened to this fifth step. I had sixth step. I remember actually at the end of my fifth step taking that hour. And have you ever had that feeling after you've finished your fifth step where you realized all along you've been carried? Because that's what I found out when I took my hour. Not that all those things I thought as I started my fourth step were true. What I found was that God had carried me through the things that I thought were the worst in my life. And I was like, holy cow, sixth step. I was absolutely willing that God take all that crap. You know, all those things that, God, please take it away. Seventh, I was asking. I was on my knees asking. Eighth step, you should have seen me writing out that list. Because now I was really ready. I was ready to do something different, to be something different. I wanted to clean that stuff up. I was willing to not be that person that I had held on to for all that time. When I got to my ninth step, I started making those amends. And I finally started making those amends to the people, starting first with the people who were closest to me. And I got to tell you, in early sobriety, those were the people who I was like, you know, really? I have to make amends to my parents? Of course I had to make amends to my parents. Of course I did. And do you know how much money I owed them? Holy cow. And do you know how willing my mother was to take the check? Absolutely. And what I found was when I was willing to start paying money in the places I owed money, that God gave me the ability to do overtime like never before. It wasn't like money was dropped in my lap so that the money that I'd taken wrongfully from others that I could give back, but I was given the opportunity to earn that money and to start growing up in that area. When it came to talking to the people about relationships, I was showing up. My ninth step changed everything about the way I saw you, the way I saw me, the way I saw God. 10th step, kept moving my feet, you know, doing that inventory, being aware of it throughout my day, because I don't want to keep bringing that crap along with me, you know, throughout the day. And I love doing that throughout my day. Still do, of course I live in 10, 11, and 12 now. And that is, I think as I'm going through the day, and I was talking with Sharon about it, how important it is as I'm going through the day to see other people, to connect with other people, to treat them with respect, learn their names. You know, I never knew that there were other people in the room. You know, what I knew was me. Me, me, me. And I think little by little, God and Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten me out of that place where it has to be all me all the time. 11th step, I love prayer and meditation. Meditation has looked a lot of different ways through me throughout sobriety. Some of it involved, you know, sitting cross-legged and doing a lot of om. And some of it has really involved doing a lot of thinking about God's will for me. You know, the prayer, talking to God, praying a lot, just being looking for that love and service that I never knew how to do, never knew how to be. 12th step, I definitely work with others. I love working with others. I was talking to Lauren a little bit before the meeting, and we were talking about sponsoring. And the wonderful things that happen, and you have the different kind of sponsees all the way. When I got to the 12th step the first time, what I knew was, and I was shaking, was that I absolutely had to share what I had been given here. Because I was awake now. I hadn't realized what I'd been doing walking through here. And I remember that I was holding my hand out to the new woman now, and I was carrying a message of hope that I hadn't even known had existed. And what God did was put a lot of people in my life, a lot of women in my life who were absolutely desperate for this program of recovery, and I got to pass that on. And as I passed it on, what I saw was the lights go on for other people. And some of the women I've gotten to work with have been absolutely the easiest, most on fire, loving this program women I'm ever going to meet. And some of them have been as crazy as I was. And what I've gotten is to connect up with God and to connect up with you in a way that I never knew was possible. So anyway, I'm thinking that what I'm going to say a little bit is, you know, I thought when I started getting on fire again, what I found was my relationships with the people who were closest to me started changing a lot too. And throughout this program, what I found was, when I started this, I was really on the road to leaving my husband, leaving my job, leaving, like, I had been in a place where I wasn't going to think. What happened for me was that I ended up actually having a relationship with my husband. Like, who knew, right? This was the man who I thought, this is what's wrong with him, this is what he's never done, this is sober, I was thinking this. Something turned around along the way where I found out that God's really blessed me with a good man, despite myself. You know, it wasn't like he got a great deal on this. It was that God has blessed me over and over again despite myself, and God has put relationships over and over again in my life despite myself. Growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous has been an absolute gift. You know, most recently, a few years ago, my husband and I were going through something where he hit a real crisis, and we moved, we ended up, you know, he was looking for work, and we moved out to New Jersey. And when we moved to New Jersey, I was like, how could this happen to me? And it was one of these ones where when I got there, I had a job where I traveled a lot, and I never really was able to jump in really deep into the community, but what I did know, into the AA community. But what I did know was that while I was there, I had to have a home group, I had to have a sponsor, and I had to work with other women. And so those were, I have to say, the high point of my living in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is the cutest place. If you ever get a chance, Red Bank has great restaurants, totally awesome. But the high point was having a home group, having an awesome sponsor. I hope she gets to listen to this and knows that I said that. But getting a sponsor who was so on fire for this program that she passed it on to me and really helped me to grow one more time in this program. And had that connection when nothing else was connecting up. We ended up moving back to Pennsylvania, actually, just about 2 months ago. And a series of events went on during this because I had thought, it's never going to work. You know, it's like I'm going to be out in Jersey forever because that's where I've been put, which would have been fine, I guess. But the series of events came to be where for some reason or another in my job, my company that I worked for got sold. A whole bunch of stock that I hadn't even realized I had been investing in got sold, and I had money where we could put down money on a house. And I was like, how does that happen? But it just all rolled out, and the perfect place showed up, and the perfect people showed up, and all of a sudden another job showed up for me so I don't have to travel all the time anymore. And all of a sudden I'm back in the community, and I'm back part with all of you. And what I'm starting to see is, oh my God, I can be part of this. I can make that connection, and I can have a home. I can have a home no matter where I am, but what I can have more than ever is if I'm open to this incredible life you give me, and you really have. It's because of you guys that I got something different. It's because of God I definitely have something different. And I can find out the world's a lot bigger than I thought was possible. And God, that we can be, I can be changed in a way that I never thought. So anyway, I'm very grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. And I'm grateful to keep seeing how I get to change and how much better you guys keep looking every time I change. That's all I got. Thanks.